Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume, improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table. Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
Tired of the hassle and risks of manual fruit cutting? Let me introduce our partners over at Supercut System, the automated solution that enhances safety, quality, and efficiency. Cut up to 120 perfect citrus wedges per minute, 6 times faster than manual. Patented technology delivers consistent slices, reducing waste and eliminating plastic. The contactless hygienic design lowers contamination risk and workplace injuries. Supercut integrates seamlessly for any volume. Improve profitability and customer experience. Experience the power of automation with Supercut. Get started today at supercut.com and be sure to ask about their risk-free trials.
Hello, food fam. This is the Walk and Talk podcast. I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. We're podcasting on site at the Carroll Hotel in beautiful Clearwater, St. Pete, Florida. If you haven't been to this property yet, get here. It's top notch with all of the amenities you expect from a Tribute Portfolio hotel. I must tell you that your dining experience with Chef Thomas Parker and company will be top tier. Okay, today's topics: adversity, resolve, and focus. Fighters fight and simply don't quit. Meet Jason Schofield, former chef and restaurateur. He continues to feed his entrepreneurial hunger. You knock him down, he picks himself up, dusts off, and keeps moving forward. Nothing great happens easily. All right, let's dig in. But first, attention all chefs and food buyers. Are you looking to improve your proteins program with quality and service by the best in the beef business? Well, reach out to Peninsula Food Service. With 25 butchers on staff, their service will dazzle you and impress your dining guests. Peninsula is the largest Creekstone Farm distributor in the Southeast United States. Let the gang at Peninsula Food Service cut your beef burdens away. Ask about their dry age program. Look them up at peninsulafood.com. All right. Let's welcome our culinary contributor, Chef Jeffrey Schlissel, to the show. What's up, Jeff?
Not much, man.
How you doing, baby?
Fantastic.
Good?
Yeah, man.
All right, all right. So, all right. I mean, who doesn't love a Rocky movie?
They don't, they got a problem.
I am all for the underdog bet. Mm-hmm. I'm like all for the American story, right? And it's kind of like a little bit about what we're going to get in today with Jason. What's your thoughts on that?
I definitely agree with it 100%. You could look at the Olympics when the U.S. team won the Olympics. They were the underdog. You look at anything there, you always have this tendency to go for the underdog, and you have to do it. And one of the best things I saw recently was, it was actually a program last night we were watching, a spring baking challenge, and the woman literally had an anxiety attack that she actually went down to the floor, and she came back up and she goes, you know what? You just got to get yourself back up. It's not staying down. It's getting yourself up. And that's what you need to do. And that's what we do as chefs. We get our butts kicked a lot, but we get up and wipe off our butt, the sand off our butt, and keep on going.
And that's what it's all about. Let's get Jason on the program. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
All right. Yeah, we know. I mean, how long have we known each other? Long time.
Too long.
Too long, right? I'm out of here. I'm leaving.
Sometimes you just try to forget it, but you're here still like a penny. You just can't. You just can't get rid of it.
It's in my pocket. It's a smelly penny. What is that? All right. So your story is not unique, but it's definitely apropos of the American story. Like it's there.
Well, thank you.
Yes. No, I mean, listen, I know your story and it seems that there's always another stairway down. Like the story, it gets deeper from the prequel.
Right. Yeah.
So, why don't you give an overview, right? So you were just real quickly. So, you know, you were a restaurateur, you've owned a restaurant group. Mm-hmm. You've had all sorts of ups and downs. You currently own a company called Hive.
Yep.
And we're going to get into that a little bit later, what you do there.
Sure.
But let's start. Like, how did you get into the business? How did you get raked over the coals, and where are you now?
So that's a good question. I started way back with a love for food. Growing up here in Tampa Bay, best memories I ever had were around food. So we would go to all these restaurants with my dad, the Turf, Old Molly O's, and we'd come, Mr. Schofield, your table's over here. And I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. Like around food, they know your name. They bring it, cut your steak at the Turf. They cut my steak as a little kid. And then we go to Valencia. We go to Cafe Pepe. We'd go to all these restaurants. So we had all these wonderful experiences as a kid. And then we go get ice cream afterwards. So I always had a love for that was me and my dad's time. So growing up, as I started chasing that high, I guess, was trying to chase that good times that I had memories as a kid with dad. And it worked into food and it worked into being in the kitchen. And then one thing led to another. And then I was there one day and I'm like, this, I guess, is what I got to do. And
so how long you been in the food business?
Man, I started making knots at a little restaurant on Davis Island, Rick's Italian Cafe. I was probably 14 years old and just making pizza dough there. I cooked my first Thanksgiving meal when I was 15.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've been cooking since my dad would go out with his girlfriends. I was left home with a kitchen full of food. And I just watched, throw a little bit of this, throw a little bit of that in there, throw a little of this and taste it. And it came out good. I mean, a lot of failure though in that.
Always.
Best learning experience though.
You burn a few things. Yeah.
Especially if it's not your food cost, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. True story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So definitely. how did you go from, hey, first turkey dinner at 15 to sleeping in your car and, what was the jump?
So I was bright and, I decided one day, I want to own my own restaurants.
Yeah.
So you go from.
Nobody advised you against that? No
one did it because I didn't know anything at the time. I was naive. I was young. And I was like, I want my own place. So what happened was I doubled down and I opened up my first little Maddie's Bar and Grill. And it was with my wife and my daughter there, named after her. She was 2. She only could count to 13 and count pizzas and count pepperonis. She'd have 50 of them on there, but she'd only count to 13. So she'd get to 1, 2, 12, 13, 13, 13, 13, 13, 13. And when she got tired of putting pepperoni on there, that was it. Then during downtime, I'd be in the back with my wife at the time, and we would cook a meal, a dinner there in the back in front of the three compartment sink. And I'd put a 2x4 there and a napkin over it, and we'd make a steak dinner and then go back to work the dinner shift. And then it started from that, then to the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one. And it grew from there from one to, I think at the end of it, it was 10 or 11 of them.
That's impressive.
No.
That's super impressive.
It sucked.
It sucked, yeah, but it's impressive.
But I loved it.
Right.
The passion. I mean, if you said something when we came in about getting your butt kicked, I guess, a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
To do what we do every day, and you have 500 covers and it's 8 o'clock and one guy didn't show up, or you were out until 3 o'clock in the morning, it's 8 o'clock and you're rolling in, you can still taste the vodka in it, and you're going to get your butt kicked doing brunch. There's some... I get goosebumps. Look at the camaraderie of getting through that brunch at the end of the day and knowing that you just did that, and then you're going to be back tomorrow to do it all over again.
Yep.
Yeah, it's definitely you're a glutton for punishment, and if you're in this business, especially at that level.
Oh yeah.
You are just looking for trouble, and you're gonna find it. It's there.
Oh, yeah. Well, we are a glutton for punishment. We're just wired differently.
Yeah.
Tremendously. I've never met another chef that was not wired similar to another chef, because it's what the good ones, I should say.
Absolutely, because there's reasons. There's reasons when you're in the kitchen, it's nothing bad. You can look next to you and you can have a saute cook that he loves just being a saute cook, but he's a 45-year-old saute cook. And there's a reason why he's not an executive chef. And there's a reason why he's not somewhere else, either because he has baggage or he's just happy doing that. 9 times out of 10, it's baggage.
Listen, there's really never a time that you have a staffed kitchen, even front of the house too. There's in this business that there aren't records, drug abuse and alcohol abuse, yeah. All of these, like the whole gamut of challenges that you would encounter out there that you would like, most people would just like quit, give up, you know, bury themselves somewhere. And these cats get up every day and do this life.
Mm-hmm.
And with the record, and, you know, I mean, I remember being around when guys come in looking for a job,
mm-hmm.
and that conversation comes up and they're like, well, yeah, I did some pretty horrible things. Well, they're working the next day. Like mm-hmm. they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing a good job. They're doing a good work.
True story. Know?
Yep.
Some of the biggest things that I ever had when people came in that set the good chefs or the good people that made a career out of this were the conceptual thinkers to solve a problem. Our job as a chef, no matter how big or how small the thing is being able to, there's always a problem. There's always a meltdown and you have to solve it. And the customers sitting in the front, they just want their food. They don't care.
Chefs and food buyers, let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com.
And what's the biggest thing we always say? After a bad shift, you always look and this is the line gets together and you say, well, none of the guests knew it.
Yeah.
And that's the win.
That's
when the guests don't see it, that is 150%. And you mentioned something too, the and we were talking about it earlier, the drug, the high, because you mentioned it, about food.
Yeah.
And I always say this, there is one place, I was 3 years old, and my grandparents used to take us out in Hollywood, right off of 441, the Turnpike and Pines Boulevard. There used to be a shopping center, it's no longer there, and it was called Cataldo's. And I would go there, and Sunday night, we'd have chicken parm and pasta vajol at 3 years old, and that's what I would eat. And to this day, every chicken parm and pasta vajol I eat in an Italian restaurant is compared
to that one.
It's food is magical. It so can transcend true. You back.
It's nostalgia. That's what the thing about food is so good. You can smell something, and it takes you back. And you're like, oh, my God, that's Nona. Or like, I see a sugar cookie. I don't care what time. When I would see my grandmother as a kid, God bless her soul, she would always have Christmas cookies, sugar cookies, decorated Christmas. I don't care if it was Easter. I don't care if it was Thanksgiving. If it was my birthday, it was every time I came, there was a plate of Christmas cookies. And I think that was, she just loved it. But every time I see that, it's like, it brings you back. You can smell, you can taste.
But you know what's crazy about that? That when you catch that, that piece of nostalgia
mm-hmm.
is how fleeting it is, how fast it, like you go, what, and it's gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how that is.
Yeah. And that's what food does for us, because it not only brings you back, but it brings you back to that whole time period, that, mm-hmm. that gathering, the communal, you know, family getting together and eating. And like you mentioned, going to Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh yeah. I guarantee you there's smells that transcend you back to Turkey too, or food for that.
So I'm going to go off subject for a second, and it's on this. The philosophy of my food is when you're sitting there cooking, I don't want to have that fleeting moment of food. Like, oh, this was this. I try to go from the appetizer to the next, where it travels, whether it's an ingredient from the first that gets into the second, whether it's a spice from the second
like
to the
lineage
third.
Like a lineage.
So you never lose that, because I don't want to lose that high. It's like a drug. I mean, you do that first crack and then you're like, oh, not that I've ever done it. This is what I've heard. I've right, never done crack. But they say you're always chasing it. So
this
for
is
me,
the judgment free zone, by the way. Just so you know.
It's like Planet Fitness.
Let's get some shots and I'll be fine. But when I do my food, it has to go from the beginning. Look at my goosebumps. They pop up because I get so much passion about that. So from the very first of it to the very end of it, to the dessert, to the final drink, there's something that like goes from each of them, because I want that high to stay as long as I can. So I want you to take that journey back with me to my Nona's house or to my meal in Turkey or the dinner I had at, you know, Clicchio and Sons in New York, like that whole little experience. Like, how can I bring it? And I want to do that with the food. And what got me burnt out of it is that I would come with that passion every day. I wanted to know how to make the ketchup. I want to know how to make the mustard. I want to know how to make everything. So if apocalypse happened, I knew how to make my tomato paste, whatever it was. That to me is a chef, taking that passion, that drive, not to someone that can bang out and cooks. Those are great. I wanted to like know everything I could know, the science behind it, but learn it all and just that passion. And it just, people would come to work for me, 700 employees, and people would come to work and they would just want to go home and not have that same passion anymore. It's like, what am I doing this for? Why am I pouring all my heart and soul and time into you and you don't even care?
It's just a paycheck to them.
It is. But to me, it was like, I was geeking out. I was like, I love the guys that on my thing that would just carry the little notepads and write down everything. Like, what are you writing down? What'd you get out of that?
Notepads make me so happy.
It's like a little brown journal. It's like, I love the guys that got the strap and the rubber bands around. They put in their back pocket. Like, he's a chef. Like, how can you tell? He's got the little pad in his butt.
Funny you say that. Literally behind you in my front pocket of that bag, there is a notebook.
Yes.
That I carry around with me. So if I don't remember something, I jot something down. And, you know, that's, and then phone is great too, because you can talk to it.
I'm not going to mention the name. You know who they are. Okay. And I don't want to talk about them.
Okay.
On air like that. They were wonderful, wonderful. They were one of my best salespeople. Right. Mm-hmm. I hired this person because they had this fat notebook. Nobody ever brings a notebook to an interview. Now, and I don't do interviews on property. I go off to a coffee shop and I'm going to hold you for like 2 hours because I'm going to dart you with questions and I'm just going to listen to you. Mm-hmm. And this was for sales, right? So I want to see how you interact. I want to see how you pivot in conversation and the whole thing. This person had a fat notebook and was taking notes the whole time. And, you know, it's not that I talk slow either. At the end of this, I said, you know, I noticed you've been taking notes this time. I said, may I just kind of like peruse that? Can I kind of check it out? They were like, yeah, sure. Wow. I was so impressed. Hired on the spot from the notes. Like they would, you know, it was from the notes though, man. Like I am so onto that.
Well, I mean, it one of the things that I do to learn about communication, because it's one of the hardest things, verbal or physical communication, is how important it is to listen to somebody. I mean, we've talked about, we have two ears and one mouth, and taking those notes, it's a sign of respect, but it's also a care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it's funny. And when I used to go into different restaurants, whether it be the chef or whether it was a line cook, I would draw the map and all the cooks would be like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm drawing a map. Mm-hmm. Well, what are you doing that for? I'm like, because when I come in tomorrow and I set up, I'm going to know where everything's at. By the time my second or third day, I knew exactly what my prep needed to be done and what I needed to do and get going. So if you're a chef out there or somebody who's inspiring to be one, take that with what Carl just said and what Jason just said. Just do that because it's amazing.
Huge. Not to mention it improves your workflow, your work.
It's muscle memory.
Yeah.
Basketball players do it all the time. They do a little thing. They shoot. When I'm reaching for my pan, I have a tong and I have my napkin. I can use my tongs to grab my saute pan, grab my little things. And if everything's there, I can just do it without even moving. So you're just getting like a rhythm.
For those of you who aren't watching the video of this.
So sorry.
Jason is literally doing what he was just saying. Like he's got his tongs. He's grabbing air.
With tongs that are in my hands that I still remember.
Even though I just want to, you know, give some, you know, props to, you know, Mr. Producer over there, John.
He did tell me after
he instructed you to not speak with your hands. And
it's my fault because I'm moving my hands, yeah, but know. Everyone knows I do that.
But you're over there moving your hands and talking about something. You just like turned to the side. I feel like moving here, I got my hands crossed.
See what
like,
you see what I
don't
here?
Know what to do with my hands.
I have some hidden, you know, yeah, it's good.
Okay.
You slept in your car. No, was it the car under the counter?
So when I came back, I went through a divorce.
Back up for a second. The reason I want you to talk about how you got to you know, not living in a home, right? Like at a house.
Sure.
Because this business in particular, but in general, people who are driven and people who are able to navigate adversity, they win. In the end, you win, even though you get slammed in the face and even though you get swallowed by, you find a way to pop your head up and win.
We call that meerkat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or glutton for punishment.
Yeah. I don't think it's a glutton for punishment. I think if you have that tenacity and that
that gusto to go and do it, you know, because, you know, listen, people tell me all the time, why are you trying to open a butcher shop? Why are you trying to open a market? Because I haven't done it.
Yeah.
And I want to.
I want to.
And the niche I have is different from everyone else. And Brenda's another one. The bakery, right? Yeah. You said that she had lived in her car too when she had opened. So you see these people that live and go through the adversity, and you hear their stories about, well, when I was doing this, like Sean Brock and your story. Oh, yeah. And there's so many other people out there that go through this adversity, but look where they are at.
Yeah.
You know,
Jason, I want you to talk about it. The business is hard. It sucks. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is
you get a divorce.
Relationships get, you know, engulfed in everything negative possible. Anyway, run through it.
So when from the first restaurant, marriage, everything was great. Divorce, leave the house in New York. I want to come back down to Orlando. Someone's living in the house that we had here in Orlando. So guess what? I'm living in my sandwich shop. For the 6 months I got here in February, and then they were in my house until September. So from February to September, I lived in This and That Eats on Orange Avenue. I would go to the YMCA and shower and play basketball. I'm not allowed there anymore.
Wonder why?
I knocked somebody out on the court playing basketball. But other than that, it was his fault. Anyway, so
he walked in my fist.
He deserved it.
He did. So I would go in there and I would pull out the cot from behind the mega top, and I'd lay down there behind the counter so no one could see it. And then I would just get on the computer and do my stuff, wake up in the morning, put it around there, go down the street, get coffee, walk back in there. Like I opened it up and did that for 6 months. And then it went from the next into the next and the opportunity and then more.
What was going through your head mentally? What were you doing? Like were you trying to go through it?
There was no other options.
I mean, did you wake up in the morning and punch yourself in the face?
No.
How did you?
I loved what I was doing though. I mean, I did. I only opened up the coffee shop and the sandwich shop because I wanted a cafe con leche because I grew up here in Tampa and I wanted a real one, not a latte. You know.
Oh, John likes that, our producer.
Oh my gosh.
You get the thumbs up.
You go ask for a cafe con leche and they give you a latte and it has fun. I'm like, no, let me take you to Ybor and get you a real one. Let me take you to La Segunda or whatever and
take them down to Miami.
Yeah, I was too about to say La Creta.
Yes, and get the Los Gorditos.
Yeah, the Gorditas. Yeah. All right, so let me ask you a question. Who in Tampa has the best Cuban sandwich?
No, you can't do that.
I can't. I'm going to do it. No, I'm going to do that. The Green Store. Interbay McDill.
What I mean by you can't do that is...
For me, it's nostalgic for me.
Right.
Because I grew up there to the Green Store. There are a lot of good ones.
If you take a Cuban sandwich, it's not supposed to have like salami and stuff. But over here, it's like they combine the Italian and the Cuban together for the, you know, the local
heritage. Like the Bloods in the Crips, because you just sit there and the Miami is like no salami. Here it's salami.
And by the way, Walk and Talk Show has no affiliation with
none of these Bloods. So I'm a Tampa Cuban style. I like the salami, the Swiss, the pickle, Cuban. It has to either be La Segunda Bakery bed or the old Mauricio over on Florida Avenue. It's not there anymore, but those two, if you go get Cuban bread, it has to have a little palm frond in it. And the palm frond isn't there for any other than aesthetics. When they bake it, it just helps split it.
Yeah.
That's like their way, cheap way of doing it. But having a good Cuban, the best one, because I grew up in Tampa, I used to love the one on the Green Store down there on Interbay and McDill. And I'm not the lettuce and tomato guy, but I like it pressed, little like mayonnaise on the outside, not butter. Let them put it on there and get that little crust on it.
They put lettuce and tomato on a Cuban?
People don't know. They put that on here.
That's sometime. What I'm saying. And that is still a delicious sandwich.
It's a great sandwich, but I don't want it, that on a hot pressed sandwich.
No.
I want the cheese oozing out, but I like the, so when back to the sandwich, I opened up the sandwich shop because I wanted the sandwiches I wanted to eat. I wanted the coffee I wanted to drink. I wanted the smoothies that I wanted, and I wanted the food, and I wanted to give people a little bit of what I wanted. So I took a little things from places around Tampa that I grew up, or places around that I traveled around the world. And I'd like, I like this potato salad. I like this accoutrement. I like this over here. I like that style. And I put it all on my own. So I took things from London. I took things from Turkey. I took things from Mexico. I took things from South America. I took the food that I wanted and did it. And people liked it.
And that's admirable and how it should be. And by the way, I just want to, I can identify, right? You know, so Walk and Talk Podcast is part of Walk and Talk Media, which we have videos that are streaming, internet, magazines, all sorts of stuff. The magazine part, people ask me, why are you doing a magazine? Like, I wasn't getting any press, you know, for the show. So I figured, you know what? Let's go make our own press. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll do our own advertising, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, I get what you're saying.
And but not only that, he's got his own personal chef that cooks and barbecue. Brings it to the shows.
Oh gosh, oh, I need one of those.
Yeah,
in my life.
I mean, where is he at today?
Yeah, I already told you it's soaking. So.
Okay, all right.
You said this earlier that there you want to do the butcher shop your way and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Well, my next concept will be a barbecue place. But I got to work with some really cool people on barbecue. I didn't get to do like the Austin thing like that. But Chef Brian Paulson, he's mm-hmm. amazing.
Yep.
Like the science behind it, like with the pellicle and letting it do stuff and then putting the rubs on it, letting it do. I have so many notes and journals of like how I want to do barbecue differently and elevated. Like I'll geek out on it.
Are you saying that you're going to?
Yeah, I will. I'll do a barbecue place. I'll do it in the next probably 3 years.
Hey, let me ask a question. Mm-hmm.
He'll have to come to the butcher shop and try my barbecue then.
Oh, I'm good. I'm down. I'd love it.
Yeah. No, I'll invite you over to the house. We'll do it because
I'll bring the bourbon.
Okay. Done.
Yes. You're not invited, Carl.
You're definitely invited.
Oh, my God. Let's see what happens here, man. Like,
that's how I shut to another show.
I'm like Rodney Dangerfield.
You're not ready for this.
Last week they got bacon, and John said it lasted less than 2 days. For bacon. It's bourbon infused.
So I had a company in New York called Two Chefs and a Bourbon. And it was just like, that was it. It was me and a chef and we liked bourbon and we just sit there and just come up with crazy ideas of food. Two Chefs and Bourbon.
Imagine Christoph here.
I'm still in my feelings here. Okay. All right. I haven't caught up to this part.
Oh,
all right.
Oh,
God.
We'll have to get him some more bacon.
Yeah, we'll do something.
You didn't even eat the bacon yet, have you?
No. You know why? No.
There's no excuse. It's bacon.
No.
It was a gift.
No, listen to me.
Okay.
So I'm very fortunate and blessed. When I moved up here, mm-hmm. when I moved my family up here from Miami, mm-hmm. I took my mother, my Cuban mother-in-law.
Oh, no, you don't even see her anymore. You don't cook at all.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. So I got you.
It's okay. And,
yeah, right. Nobody cooks except her.
Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit rackporcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.
And my wife too a little bit, but mostly, yeah, no. So we're waiting for the opportune time, and mm-hmm. that's going to be like a grandiose part of a component of a more of a grandiose.
Gotcha. Right. I feel you.
So take it chill.
Okay. Right? All right.
I was going to throw you, a line, but fuck it now. Oopsie. Oh man, you ruined. I had a streak. Damn it.
That's two. He said the F and the D word.
I had a 20 episode streak.
I'm glad. Blame it on the soulless ginger.
It's your fault.
The soulless ginger did it.
Made you do it.
Yes.
It's the fiery beard. And
yes. It's the passion. God. It's the passion talking about Cubans. Sandwiches.
Coño.
Coño.
Woo.
All right. So.
Well, a lot of people.
Look, don't be a mind moon. All right.
Put it back.
No monkey faces.
All right. Take it easy.
All right.
All right. Where?
Mm-hmm.
Where can I get the best deal on, I don't know, paper goods?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gloves. What's going on with the glove market right now? I mean, the pandemic.
Do you know anything about this?
I might know something about restaurant disposables. I might know a guy.
I know a guy.
I don't know what camera I'm looking at, but I know a guy.
You're that one's here. Yours.
You're this one here.
Hit me up. I know a guy.
Oh, wait. So you're saying it's you.
Oh, it's me. Yeah, it's definitely me.
Okay. So you got out of the restaurant business.
I did.
Restaurant person.
Yes.
Front lines.
The back lines, front lines, in the trenches. And then kind of transitioned. I didn't want to be, I did a consulting thing for a while, and I wanted to leverage everything that I learned to help the smaller mom and pop places and the buying groups, the GPOs, the things that are out there that are readily available, but most restaurants said no. And I felt like I didn't want to be the cheesy used car salesman. The guy with like the velour pants and like the this and that and like trying to sell you something. I just wanted to pass on what I did for the sake of doing it because I wanted you to be able to succeed and learn maybe something that could be better for me. Because there were so many times when I had my restaurants where I forgot to pay the electric bill because I had to make payroll. So we come home and then we had to bring out the tent and the little plug in the light bulb lantern and sit in there and be like, oh, we're going to camp out in the kitchen or the living room because I forget. So having that passion where if I would have known things a little bit earlier on and I could have made, you know, instead of $20,000 profit a year, I could make 50 because I was a part of a GPO or I was a part of a buying group or I was part of something that I can get something back to help me actually love more what I already did. I wanted to do that. So I started Hive and that was that. Then the pandemic hit, shut my industry down. And we went from managing contracts to then owning contracts and then doing our own manufacturing on our own brand. So then we started manufacturing cups and straws and napkins and gloves and stuff. And we started bringing them in and then selling them. So when no one could get gloves during the pandemic, we had containers coming in and stuff like that because we had the relationships. So then that kind of pivoted to where we're at now, where we have probably 60 SKUs of stuff. We are the manufacturer, we're the direct importer, and we are the distributor. We cover all Florida right now, and then we ship into bigger.
So that gives you more ROI than a lot more ROI.
Yeah, and it's a win. It's a win for the buyer too. For the buyer,
especially if you're going to be the one that produces the glove or whatever you're producing, manufacturer, I should say.
It's like buying something factory direct. Mm-hmm. There's no brokers, middlemen. We are the importer on record. We are the.
So you're saying you're competitive on.
Beyond competitive. We can sell. I can sell. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I used to work for one of the big conglomerates out there, $25 billion worth, and they were the worst on paper goods.
Well, that's where the big guys, the broadliners, they make all their monies in the paper disposables. Because everything else is a commodity. There's very little margins in it. But when you buy that monogram or you buy that those branded products, that's where they make all their money up.
He mentions the one place I worked for.
I didn't know. It's a brand. But I mean, you buy, and there's nothing wrong with Cisco's. There's nothing wrong with Cheney Brothers. There's nothing wrong with the guys because it's a necessity. But where they make their money and where they could actually do a lot of favors towards the restaurant, it's like, all right, how can I help the restaurant leverage that? Well, shit.
It's okay. See, he's already broke it. He's already popped it. He's already broke the seal.
So it was like, where can I add the most value back to the restaurant? I'd rather see the little guy win and do that. So
now, do you go to market differently? Because obviously you're only doing non-food. So that's another truck and another invoice that has to go into that establishment. How do you get around that mentality of that chef or that business or that restaurant owner?
All right. We'll use in case in point. We'll say nitrile gloves, if you buy it from a big boy, and it might not be that price now, $90. You buy it from me, $60.
So $30 difference in case. 10 boxes, right?
It's the same 10 boxes.
So 1,000, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a huge difference. Yeah. But you know, if you're talking about...
That's a 30% margin that you get to go back to the bottom line that equates to 7% net profit, and I can show you that on stuff. I mean, and those things like that. Not to cut you off.
No, but it's real money.
That's huge. That's huge money where I can give that back. And then I give you 2 week terms. We deliver it. We just warehouse it. We distribute it. We do the custom, whatever you need.
And the other part too is because you're buying it like that, when you could go X amount of days a week, then they don't have $30 more tied up in inventory. They have $30 to spend on that commodity product that you just talked about. Maybe they want to do a special whatever. And there's that money.
Or maybe they can, you know, in our current situation with inflation and rise, high cost of goods, they can maybe be more competitive on their, on their menu price. Right.
Absolutely.
So,
but, especially with to-goes now, everyone's doing the Ubers and everyone's doing the Dashes and stuff. Like, that's a huge portion of it. They say it's going to be like $1 trillion business here
That? I would never do a DoorDash. Like,
I do it all the time.
I couldn't.
I love it. But you couldn't. But our kids, I have teenagers and I have 20-year-olds and teenagers. Like, that's what they grew up doing. So it's not what we would do. We sound like our parents, but like that's the world they grow up.
Get off my lawn.
They wouldn't know any better.
Here's the thing. When the pandemic hit, one of the biggest things.
And that's different now. That's different.
True. But here's the difference. They still are putting those tamper resistant labels on stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's still, you know, it's still that thought process. Let's keep on going with it.
And it's safe. Yeah, and exactly. They think this. So before the pandemic, back in 2000.
Oh, my God, you're paying an arm and a leg and a testicle to go if you're delivering it.
Before I knew what Uber Eats was and DoorDash and all that, I lived in Turkey. It was crazy that you could order McDonald's or Burger King and they would deliver it to you on a moped in Turkey in 2009. I could do that for any, I can get Starbucks. Like no one was doing that. And it was the first things of that. And I'm like, what is this little guy on the little thing here? What is that Burger King? He's got like a little mat on it. He's like, no, they deliver that. I'm like, Burger King delivers?
You did number two.
It was like that in Turkey. It's like, all right, it was great. But
that's awesome.
But that's other cultures. And we just caught onto it late. It took the pandemic to happen. So,
What's your website?
www.hivevoc.com. Hivevoc.com.
So you went from restaurateur to entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So you have warehouses. Mm-hmm. We kind of didn't hit.
Oh yeah.
I want some grit. Tell me the grit.
The grit was living in a...
But wait a minute. So just because, listen, these podcasts go for 30 minutes, 40 minutes. People, mm-hmm. they forget a little bit, right?
Right.
So you're 14, 15, you start getting this love for the business, mm-hmm. Food business. Somewhere in there, not too far in the future later, you open up one restaurant, one turns to 11. Mm-hmm.
Culinary school or no culinary school? So school of hard knocks.
I got to work under some master chefs here at local ACF master chefs in Tampa, Craig D'Amico. He taught me, gave me the time and taught me what it means when you put oil in a pan and how to saute and why the ripples are there. And I was like, there's more to this than putting something in a pan. My mind was blown. And then it was the flavors. And then it was like this. And it was like that. And I was like, holy crap. And then the science. If I wasn't a chef, I would have been a physicist. I love the science behind baking and the food. I mean, the reasons why things brown. I could go on. And that was why I loved it, because I never got bored.
It's funny. You said you would have been a physicist. Mm-hmm. I would have been a chemist if I could have gotten through math.
Yeah.
Because I love the intricacies of how. And like my daughter said to me, why do you put the salt in the eggs when you're scrambling it? I said, well, two reasons. One, you're spreading it out. And two, the salt actually helps the
break down the protein and makes it water. So instead of you taking it, if you just beat your egg and you pour it in there, it kind of like comes out like snot. But when you put a little salt in there and you whip it, it'll come in there like water. It just breaks down the bonds and the proteins, and it makes it a lot better product. Then you got to put your fat in there. You got to put some butter in there.
You see how you took it?
He knows what he's good.
I know, but you noted last week you told me that how you love when I geek out on food.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. You just introduced me to a new, me as a ginger.
Yes.
And soulless. He has a soul. I don't know
about that.
I don't know. This is a rough crowd over here. I am kind of like the great uniter.
You and Coco.
Sorts. Yes, yeah. And Coco.
The back to what you said, where the love and the grit came from was just, I always wanted to do my own thing. I was always an entrepreneur since a kid. I had a car detail, like little thing, J&J Auto Detail at 14. I was detailing cars. I was the guy doing like the lawn mowers around the neighborhood. I worked in a pawn shop. My dad, it was instilled in me work ethic. If you're going to do it right.
There it goes right there. The work ethic. And that's something that's not instilled anymore.
No.
Oh my gosh.
No.
So much.
And that was what did it for me. And then also being my own boss. I never felt like I worked a day when I own my places or when I work for other people. But Thomas Keller said one time, he's like, treat it like you own it, one day you will. And that stuck to me. He's like, all right. So I take the pride, like I'm cleaning this. Why are you cleaning so much? It's time to go. I'm like, because like I have to do this. I have to clean, because one day when I have it, I have to lead by example. So for me, it was just taking pride in what I did, showed up in work. You said something about when you saw a chef one day walking out when he was just dirty. It's like, gosh, if he looks like that, I mean, what is he doing in the back?
What does the station look like?
Yeah. And then it's like, then he's frustrated. He's throwing things. Like if you just have everything put where it goes and done and clean and everything is nice, it goes so much easier in the world. And I love it. But
and I'm trying to get that with my daughter. She's 9. And she's funny. The other day, my wife put something in the wrong spot. And here comes the little Jeffrey coming out. It goes here. And I'm like, oh. There's a dad win.
Yes.
Not only dad, but it's a chef win.
Yes. There's a term. There are people a lot smarter that have been doing a lot longer, came up with these things that just mise en place. Have your stuff where it goes. Everything has a place.
Yeah. And it drives people. And that's the difference when people are not in the industry. And then you come to somebody's house who's in the industry, mm-hmm. like your pantry looks like Publix, or your pans, pots, they all have where they go. They're amazed. Like, where's this? Oh, it's right over there. And here. Well, how did you know? Cause I put it away. Well,
it's on my schematic.
Yeah. It's on my picture.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Right. I get it. That works.
Yeah. And can you, some people call it OCD. Some people call it control freaks. We just call it chefs.
All right. I'm going to ask a chef to another chef, since we have like a chef man's going on here.
I like that, chef man's.
How many out of all the dishes you've cooked and of all the amazing things like that, how many of that you actually really like proud of, like that you can say like
There lately, there's been a couple actually.
That's actually a
really good question.
That's
We are our own worst critics.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. 100. Look, I will say
that's what makes the good ones good.
But people who aren't
artists, pushing yourself. Yeah.
Before you answer this question, mm-hmm. and you're gonna answer this question, but people who are artistic in some way,
autistic?
No, art. Okay. Artistic. Just wanna make sure. People who are into being creative, man, you hate what you make.
Yeah.
You don't like what you do and you don't want to show it to anybody. Right. So the fact is the chances are that because you guys are creative in that respect, you want everybody to have what you create, but you really don't. And when you put it out there, until you've gotten enough slaps on the back and attaboys.
I don't think the attaboys ever good enough for us.
It
doesn't. And because you're constantly pushing yourself, like you get done and someone is like, oh my God, that is amazing. And you go, yeah, I should have put a little more lemon in it.
Or I took it out a little bit too soon. Or something. It's like, you always know that you can make it better.
Yeah.
And for me, I have three dishes and I know them to this day. One was a chili that I did. One was my bolognese meal.
Bolognese. Oh boy.
And then my other one, when I was 16, I did a chicken cacciatore. I took a recipe out of, and it was like, All Recipes or something. It was like it was a Betty Crocker, like paperback book. It was a hardbound book in my dad's thing. And I did it. Someone pawned the book and I took it out and I took it home and I did chicken cacciatore. And I still remember the flavors of this day. It was crazy. And then my chili, I did like a whole, like did the bone marrow and like did everything around and sweated everything in it. I took it to the next level because anyone can open a restaurant. Here's some advice. If you want to open a pizzeria and you want to be the guy, don't be like the guy down the road. You have to find what's different and do something different because people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And they can taste the love. They can taste, people say they can't taste food. You can't taste love. You can't taste emotion. I say bull crap. That's a lie. You can taste the love and the passion someone does in their food. So if you want to do something, if you want to make a sandwich, you want to do a pastry, you want to do whatever, do something different than anybody else did and just like stay true to who you are. Don't do what everybody else wants. You know, you got to make money, but like just do something different.
Make it better.
Not necessarily make it better.
By make it better. Like for example, look at this podcast, right? We're not in a studio
mm-hmm.
and It's not like sitting on $1 million or something.
No, you really are the restaurant,
you know, probably
but the view alone is worth million. That.
Yeah.
So the point is I went out and I spent pretty penny on equipment and, you know, just so we can mm-hmm. have the opportunity to put out the best product that we can, you know what I mean?
Okay, so you
and just, there's a love affair to this too. All right, by the way.
So you just touched on something that I was gonna say. There's no new way to make a dish.
Right.
There's only sourcing good ingredients correct. And the technique to execute it.
Yes,
we talked about technique last week.
So all this wonderful equipment around here, there's a lot of it. You guys should see it. It's really nice.
Yes,
but if I've done podcasts where there's a guy on his iPhone 14, there's two little tripods and that's it, and you got a little headphones.
Correct.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Nope. But
the level of it, you have to be able to do that. And you can see that you care and the passion in it. And there's no new way to make a chicken parm. It's how you, did you do this? Did you do that? You technique, where did you get the chicken
it's
from?
It's taking the time
yes.
to do more.
Yes.
Look at us. We have to break all this down and set it up just to do a podcast. It's extra work, but it makes it better.
But the next time you'll see this, they've already started going, okay, if we did this and we did this, so they're actually
setting the bar.
We're learning every time we do right. these things to get even better.
Yeah.
When we had our pizzeria, Maddie's Craft and Crew, we milled our flour in house. We made all our cheese. We made our butter. We made our salumi, our charcuterie, ground everything. Like we milled it and we sifted our flours for the fine stuff we made for our pastas, the other stuff that was a little bit more coarse we made for our pizzas. Like that's what type of level that we were doing to make our pizzas different. We were milling. We had a stone burn mill in the back. We had a 12-inch stone burn mill. I was milling it. I was getting the flour, hard winter wheat, and coming in and milling it. And
that's, you have to love that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. And I don't know many pizzerias that were doing it. I only know one bakery in Miami that does that, and that's Sullivan Bakery.
So you know who gave me that idea? Vetri in New Jersey. He would mill his flour and he was like, I just wanted to be different. The smell, the aromas and stuff like that. I'm like, if he did it, let me try it. And I loved it. But it was just different. But I don't think the normal person could see it unless I told them the story. But I could taste it. I could feel it.
Yeah, but that's where people are going to. The consumer will notice that.
Yeah.
Because you are doing it differently. You're putting more effort into it because you wanted to do it. When you want to do something, you simply do it better.
I'd rather do 10 dishes perfectly than 50, like just to put them out and make money. Right. I'd rather just do those 10 that you're just like, oh my God, this is like, oh, it's so amazing. What just happened in my mouth?
Yep.
Like, oh my, oh, and then you gave me this perfect Pilsner to go with. Oh my God. And you go to dessert and you're like, oh my gosh, what is this? And then you do this after dinner cocktail. And it's like, you go through the whole journey of that. And I get to do that now for charity. I love it. I don't cook much in the restaurant.
You are doing some good charity stuff too, right? Get into that.
Yeah, we do a lot for the Children's Cancer Center. So I auction this wonderful thing off, if anyone wants to know. Me, my partner, Patrick, and then my best friend, Scott, we do in-home cooking things. So this year we did, this is the second year we did it. We raised $20,000
wow.
per meal. We did three meals. So we raised $60,000 and we will do an in-home cooking experience for eight. And man, I pull out all the stops. I mean, last year I like molecular gastronomy and like modernist cuisine. I did some really fun stuff. Do you know
what that is? What he just said?
Yes.
Okay. Because I would translate. Yeah.
No. Well, listen, translate.
So modern cuisine or molecular gastronomy, that's the stuff we play with. That's El Bulli for an Adrian. Yeah. That would be the only thing I would have to say that changed our industry.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only thing that could change food the way we, like the olive sphere, that would definitely, the olive oil sphere.
I was doing that.
Yeah.
We did it. We did a New York strip of Wagyu number 5. We would sous vide it. We take it out. We would cryo freeze it. And then I would fry it, cryo freeze. And then we would do that. And I would fry it in beef tallin. So from the top of the meat to the bottom, it would be perfectly pink from the top to the bottom. And you couldn't get that if you took it out because it browns. So, but if when you cryo freeze it, you freeze it where it's doing that. But then I'm cooking in oils, convection style cooking. So it's only going to cook the outside of it. It's going to be perfectly like, oh my God, it sizzled. Then we made the butter. I'd make the butter and from heavy whipping cream, we'd do that and squeeze it out, put that on top, did the steak frites, made the cheese, and then put everything on that on steak and frites. But it was my steak and frites. And it was the way we wanted to do it. And it wasn't like, and I loved it because anyone can get a steak and frites. But like,
those are fries, just I'll translate.
Yeah, like a roster. But I like food like that and just doing it differently. My brain geeks out on like how to do things different.
But you actually, and I'm going to quote Ivan Orkin, it's you cook the food you want to and you're not going to apologize for it. Mm-mm. And I think I just learned that at 51 and I'm 52. So I just learned this last year. So, I mean, it took me a long time to realize I need to cook the food I want and I don't apologize for it at all now.
Yes and no. I learned this the hard way. I had a restaurant. I went to a new area. We opened it up and I was like, I'm going to change the way they drink cocktails. I'm going to change the way they eat food. And boy, oh boy, $500,000 later, we went back to Budweiser and Bush and 20 cent wings.
Got to know your audience.
But I didn't get to give them the food I wanted to get, but the other restaurants we did, but it was a hard lesson. So in restaurants, you have to know your audience. But
yeah,
when you get to be famous and stuff like that, you can cook the food you want and say,
whatever,
stick it to him. But
well, I mean, he did it out of 8,000 ramen places. He's number one, and he's an American, a Jewish kid from Brooklyn.
I love good ramen.
Have you ever eaten his restaurant?
Uh-uh, not yet.
Worth the trip up to New York.
So we're going?
Oh, sure.
Down.
Oh, I'm down for that.
We're going to take the podcast on the road. You heard it here, guys. You heard it here first. Episode 100, we're going to have ramen. I don't know when that'll be.
Not that long away, but 74 more to go.
Yeah, so that gives us time to plan.
Yeah, what are we on? This is 26.
All right, so it might be like episode 60 or 70. We'll try to do something.
We're popping out like two a week.
Or I can do it remote. I can go do it from Zoom. Like, this is so good. You guys should be here.
We don't do that.
Oh.
No. It hurts the quality too much.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs.
Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
I can just call in and be like, we have a special caller on the phone. But I'm eating ramen.
We'll do a call.
He'll do a call in.
Yeah, we have the
technology. He and I will be up there, and you can be here.
I'll FaceTime you.
Yeah. I tell you what, man. Like,
we'll put the cameras right here in front of the phone and be like, it'll be just us. Like,
and I'll be honest, slurping your, his restaurant is literally half the distance to the bar and all the way back to that wall and the window here, and that's it. That's there's it. Like 30 seats.
There's a place in Orlando that does, he's like the third time he's been recognized for best chef of the South. He's got like a Japanese style sushi place, killing it. And he's got a place that's the size of like this little enclave we're sitting in.
Yeah, there's actually Ichikuru in Seminole Heights. Mm-hmm. Ichikuru is actually a really nice restaurant.
They got good ramen. I like Domusco over there on Kennedy by Channel 13. That's my little go-to place here.
I haven't been in there.
Yeah. Guess we got to go.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah.
We can check that out.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Next week before we go do the other thing over in Orlando.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe Monday or Tuesday.
Maybe.
Yeah. All right, there we go.
Done.
As long as he can come.
Yeah.
And John.
I mean,
we'll
bring John.
At this point, it's, am I even allowed to?
Probably not. There's a chef going on here.
Can I hang? Can I be down? Can I ride? I mean, what are we talking about here?
I mean, we did talk about we need to do this with bourbon and stuff and do this later, but like.
Oh, wait. Oh, well, yes. I just want to talk about. So you mentioned Bolognese before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You did.
So,
yes, I did.
A very good friend of ours, her name is Coco Frey. Mm-hmm. And she works for a company called Qurn, mm-hmm. Qurn. And basically, they do meat alternatives. What is what's it called?
Microprotein. It's a fungi-based
mm-hmm. protein, right? So they do these, pieces, right? And it's this fungi. It's really, really good. And it's for an alternative meat. Can do anything with this stuff. The crumbles.
Yeah, it inhibits the flavor that you're cooking with. So if you're making a bolognese.
She's way ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's where in our lifetime, that's where.
Well, hold on. Check this out.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, but hold on. You're right. What you're saying there. So where we are here at the Carroll Hotel with Chef Thomas.
Mm-hmm. Great guy.
Absolutely. His culinary is awesome.
Here it comes because he's been talking about it. I can't wait to try this.
His bolognese is tops. Mm-hmm. Tops, probably the best bolognese I've ever had. Okay,
ooh, that's a bold statement. I've had some pretty good stuff.
Listen, everybody has their tastes and whatever, but best I've ever had.
Now, American bolognese or bolognese Italian?
Time out. Let me finish. I gotta get this thought out.
Okay.
So on our an episode or two ago, whatever
it's made with gravy.
Go ahead.
Shut up. Okay. Shut up. So what we're gonna do? Mm-hmm. Is we're going to get the...
I got them yesterday.
Yeah, I got mine yesterday too. So we have the product from Qurn. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a meat alternative bolognese challenge. So it's going to be Chef Thomas.
Oh,
yeah, you want you in.
No, you're in now. Oh, you're good. Yeah. You brought it up. I've been holding this back for, I don't know, 20 minutes now, 30 minutes ago.
Whenever. Perfect. I'm in.
Yeah, so I'm... and
has to be 100% plant-based. So if you put ricotta, you better be plant-based ricotta in it. Plant-based cream.
Does it have to be 100% or is it just with the...
Listen, if the challenge is to take a meat alternative and make it into a vegan dish, then it has to be 100%.
Right. I'm gonna have to do a little homework because I haven't played really... I mean, plant-based ricotta. I have to figure out how to make that. I can make cheese all day long.
We'll talk off.
Okay,
I got one for you.
I can make cheese all day long.
All right. So I'm thinking at least four.
Okay.
Four chefs.
Right? Yeah, we need one more. Well, Alex or Jonathan. If Jonathan can get back to work.
Right.
Yeah, we can do that.
How about we get Chef Adam? I can ask Chef Adam from Ferbici and Boulon. And
he's a corporate chef. Yeah, police.
Police.
Yeah, I just saw him yesterday.
I saw him yesterday too.
Did you?
I was down there at Boulon.
At Boulon, yeah. How beautiful is that?
He's got it going on, man.
Oh, yeah.
He's got it. That's nice. Definitely. We'll be there next. I'll be there next Wednesday.
I love that. I have, obviously, they're not even really open exactly yet, but.
Chef Adam, he's down. I'll talk him into it.
Well, the only thing about Adam, and I'll say
he's an amazing guy.
He's awesome, but he doesn't like the cameras. And
we don't have to have him to like the cameras.
No, we're gonna. Dude, are you kidding me?
He's
we're gonna. I mean, he doesn't have to like him. As I'm saying,
oh no,
have to like him. Like I make him do like a couple. We'll do a couple shots beforehand.
Yeah, like when you shake his hand, it's like this.
He's got
You know, he's like, hey, let me shake it.
One of his fingers is like two of mine.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He's like the guy from Fletch.
He's like a grizzly bear.
Nicest guy. Good soul.
But he's such an amazing human being. He's a good dude. He's really a good.
Awesome. So getting back to your question that you said I had to answer. I got my one.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
So one would be I was first starting out. And I was doing something, and my mom and dad were out paying a condolence call to a friend of the family that had passed away. I was 16. And I ended up doing like a fried brie with herbs and pistachio and a blueberry reduction. And then I made a filet mignon with a Marsala reduction and some other things. And I got really pissed because they came home so late. So I just threw it all together in one plate. And my dad goes, that is the best goddamn meal. And I'm not kidding aside. Up until his death, that was his favorite goddamn meal. Wow. And to me, I was just like, things happened by accident. That was one.
That inspired you, though.
Yeah, definitely. Now I think my plant-based, I would have to say the hearts of palm, that's the bone marrow. I absolutely love that dish.
Great combination.
Yep. It's vegan bone marrow, but it's the hearts of palm.
I was thinking real bone marrow.
No, it's 100% vegan, and I char the outside. I came up with the idea by slicing down hearts of palm one day, and I went, hey, I wonder if this would work, and I charred it with a Searsol, so it made it look like it was charred bone, and then filled it with like the food waste, the tops and the bottoms of what you would throw away normally, and kind of sauteed that down and made it like creamier. That, to me, was one of the ones I love, and I think my jerked BLT, it's just...
How'd you get him on a bread?
Huh?
How'd you get him on bread?
Oh, he didn't eat the bread yet.
Jerk BLT. You made a real jerk sandwich. Not like a jerk on a bread.
Oh, my
bad.
Chef humor. Wow. I tell you what, you know.
Wait for this bolognese cookout.
Really?
Yes.
So the bourbon bacon, I soak it, and then I put it with my own homemade jerk, and then it's got red sliced thin onion, that's tomatoes, romaine, on a nice brioche, and then we put aji verde on it, and oh, my God. It's life-changing.
You almost did an oive.
I won't do an oive for that. There's some other things I'll do oive for, but I not that.
I'm aroused right now as a chef.
I can tell by the way you're looking at it.
I'm red right now, and it's because
he's extra ginger right now.
Like, I'm gonna do this right now for him at home. I'm gonna double eye wink you. that's how I feel right now on the inside. He just made me feel that good.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah. All right. So
this was a blast. Thank you so much.
it definitely was.
It's kind of
the only thing missing is bourbon and bacon inside the bourbon.
Seriously, no joke. I think I need like a double. All right, so.
I need a double of Adam's fingers. It'll be like this. That's like a four finger.
Yeah, it's like a fifth of the bottle. All right. Listen, John, you're awesome today.
Thank you so much.
Jason, thanks for being on the show. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm calling you back in or not. We'll have that conversation.
It's okay. I'll have him. I'll take him.
You guys are, are you guys going to move in together? You're going to share an apartment?
I think we just became best friends.
A cot.
I'm okay with being the big spoon or little spoon.
Oh, wow.
It's okay.
All right. We're gonna follow up on the relationship. And hey, we are out.
I like that.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and productivity solutions, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, many customization options ensure that your workspace is tailored to your unique needs. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.